cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
I want to get to the author of a new book, Earthly Order, How Natural Laws Define Human Life. So let's get to it.
Salim Ali is professor of energy and the environment at the University of Delaware. Also, as Carol just mentioned, the author of Earthly Order, How Natural Laws Define Human Life. Salim, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Tim.
Well, thanks so much for joining us here. When you write about natural laws defining human life, what do you mean?
Well, it's basically looking at some of the fundamental constraints that the planet has on us. So, when we talk about markets are ultimately dependent on some aspect of natural resource constraints. And so we're going back to the basic laws of nature, essentially, and making sure that we align our economic and social systems in congruence with those constraints.
You know, I've talked about this before on air, so listeners will be familiar with it, but I grew up in California, and I had a professor in college. I went to college in Maine. A professor in college who said, California is a place where nobody should ever have lived because of the lack of water and the wildfires. And I'm wondering, Professor, if the market is failing in that sense, because you see California home prices still just out of control. And I say to myself, wait a second, and this is somebody who has family in California, why are people living in a place where there is no water?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to that classic Hollywood film Chinatown, you know, it goes to that kind of the heart of that challenge in California in terms of water security. And one could say the same of Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, so many places where we have designed human habitation without really considering the natural constraints there. And especially the number of people who live there. I mean, perhaps you could have some level of population, but that's a good example of that. And engineers have given us this illusion that we can basically use technology to construct all these systems. And for the short term, yes, they work fine. But in the long term, the stress is going to build up eventually. And that's what we have to be conscious of.
Well, and I do wonder about, you know, as you think about this order and the things that are so connected and how we teach it to our younger generation, like how do we need to be rethinking things? Because, you know, I'm listening to you speak and I've been thinking about, is it time for us to tell the world, back off, stop consuming so much because Earth can't handle it? Like I've really been thinking about, we're such a consumption-led society, but it's really being brought down as a result. But tell us a little bit about how everything kind of connects with one another, natural social systems, you know, and how it can maybe, you know, give us a heads up on where we're going, good or bad.
Yeah, you know, I am very much, you know, approaching this from a practical point of view. We are going to need to consume in order to sustain livelihoods, but we need to move towards constructive consumption rather than having consumption which is not considering some of those natural constraints. So I'm all for green growth. I mean, there are many ways in which you can use the capitalist system in a very constructive way. But what we have done is we've not really considered some of those fundamental constraints that physics puts on us. I mean, for example, many years ago, you know, in the 1960s, 70s, there was an economist who wrote a book, it was published by Harvard University Press, was called The Entropy Law in Economics. His name was Nicolae Georgescu Rojen, a Romanian immigrant who wrote this. And, you know, it was a wonderful book, and what it tried to do was to link some of those physical constraints to economics. But unfortunately, we lost our way at some point, and we could have great growth, we could have markets functioning, but we just need to do them within those constraints.
All right. So if we did that, I mean, how would markets react? How would our world change?
Well, we would just have different kinds of products. And we're seeing that now, but to some degree, we're seeing, you know, the growth of green products, but it has happened as a reaction, and it's still very niche,
Can I jump in for a second? So then think when we're seeing the constraints of energy supplies as a result of the Russian war into Ukraine, that we shouldn't necessarily release supplies, produce more, because ultimately it's a fixed commodity. At some point it's going to run out, but let innovation disruption happen.
I mean, with regard to part of it is that we are also very knee-jerk in our approach to looking at even environmental problems. And so it's not just, I don't want to just put all the blame on the markets. I think environmentalists share the blame that they don't make science-based decisions. So, for example, with the war in Ukraine, you know, 3 weeks ago, Europe had to pass new legislation to basically classify nuclear energy as clean energy. And that's because they completely had this panic attack after Fukushima, and they didn't consider that actually from a natural science perspective, nuclear power, especially existing nuclear power plants, which were already operating, mm-hmm. made a lot of sense to provide baseload power. And now they have no baseload power, so they have to either be importing gas from Russia or they have to reclassify nuclear. So the environmentalists share this blame that we do not have science-based decision-making. We have what I call environmental awareness, but we don't have environmental literacy. And so that's the real challenge we have. And that's what Earthly Order tries to do. I don't want to be, you know, just a bleeding heart environmentalist in the book. I really want to make the connection between pragmatism and consumerism.
Salim, come back again, because we would love to continue with this. And this is certainly a topic that comes up a lot. Salim Ali, professor of energy and the environment at the University of Delaware, his book, Earthly Order, How Natural Laws Define Human Life.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie is based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Heard, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.